Four maniacs residing in a tree, on a whim, changed themselves into a podcast. While in this state, they drifted, one morning, by a young movie. Gently, they blew through its hair, its mind, and its dreams. Tonight, it's finally time to talk about that movie. Deathbed, the bed that eats, on
B Movie Mania.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B Movie Mania. And now, B Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and Crazy Chris Hudson.
Welcome to B Movie Mania. I am your host, Chris Hudson, and with me tonight in this deathbed discussion. Deathbed? The bed that discusses?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't work. Jason Hulls.
No, I wanted to do it.
Michael Hayes.
Hi, yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
Spent a lot of time on that intro. Thanks, Mike.
The intro was great.
Paul, give me something better.
I'm sorry, Chris. I'm just not feeling very good tonight. I don't know if it was trapped in that painting or what, but let me just... Hold on, let me just grab this Pepto-Bismol here and just...
Mm-hmm, there it is.
Woo.
I think we're all lucky tonight, Paul, since you were gone last episode and I discovered you in that painting.
Yeah.
And pulled you out of it. For those listeners that missed the teaser last week.
Gotta listen to the teasers, folks.
They're kind of better than the episodes, honestly. Just...
Yeah.
Oh, well,
don't say that.
Well, then we'll get the fans that only listen to the teasers.
Yeah, the teasies. I'm a teasy.
This is already going off the rails.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Deathbed. Mm-hmm. Deathbed, the bed that eats, was written and directed by George Barry, who hasn't really... I'm not going to say he's never done anything else, because I'm sure he's a very fine person and has lived a wonderful life, but has never made another film, according to IMDb. Mm-hmm. Paul, you saw some extra features on the Blu-ray, right? Saw George Barry at a Denny's?
I own the Blu-ray. This is Paul speaking. I own the Blu-ray. Yeah. There are special features on the Blu-ray. I think there are special features on the DVD as well. It doesn't really explain much. It's just, it's George and... Stephen Thrower really helped put this together and sort of like rediscover it. It's them and like a couple other people. George's son is at the diner just hanging out talking. The audio's not great, so it's kind of hard to tell. It's fun and it's insightful, or it's not insightful, but it's fun to watch.
Did anybody find out like the story behind this movie? Because I didn't.
I can tell you what the story is behind this.
Tell us.
Let's hear it, Mike.
I mean, I don't have any research, but I can take a wild stab at it.
Here we go.
It's probably better than the real story.
Some people wanted to do a movie, so they fucking did it. They found a wooden stone area. They did it over there. And then
they had
a theater access, so they put a bed inside of a black box theater and then filmed in there. That's the end. What they did.
I have a slightly better true story.
Oh,
to expand upon your wonderful flights of fancy there, Mike. This is a deathbed fact.
DBF, baby!
Filming began in 1972. It took about 5 years or so to film. I don't know why. That's just what I read somewhere. So I'm guessing it didn't take that long to film. Cost about $30,000. And every bit of that is on screen, let me tell you.
I think he started with $10,000. Yeah. And it eventually got up to 30,000. So maybe that explains the 5-year period of maybe just he needed to collect a little more money, shoot a few more close-ups of the Pepto-Bismol and stuff like that. Do what you got to do.
Yeah.
What's great is he finally finished it and made a print and took it to a distributor in the UK who said, hey, we'll totally distribute it, but you need to put some credits on this bitch. Because he didn't add any credits. But he didn't have the $3,000 to add the credits. So they just shipped the print home and it rotted in his attic. In the meantime, the movie lived on as a bootleg somehow. Someone apparently loved this movie enough to record it, to make another print of it or something. And it
That was a joke. Someone said, this is a joke. I'm going to record it and I'm going to show my other friends it as a joke.
That's probably it. And it made the round.
They did not love it.
Just really had to get out there and beat the bushes for the extra $20,000 to finish Deathbed.
But George was completely unaware of this.
Yeah.
Apparently. So he had no idea and didn't even discover that it had developed a bit of a following until he like looked up something on the internet and saw people were talking about it.
I saw someone who made a stage play of this, and it was kind of a not a reimagining, but a retelling of the Deathbed movie and the story behind its creation.
That's a great idea.
Oh, that is pretty good.
With one of the actual actors / the lighting technician / creator of the Deathbed. Weirdly enough.
Okay.
And to hear her say it, tell it, Barry was hanging out on the internet at like 3:30 in the morning and came across just a message board about his movie. He's like, holy shit, that's the movie that's in my attic.
Yeah.
That's
he's
awesome.
Like, I guess maybe I should put this out finally.
I bet you that if you did a short documentary about that, it'd probably be a lot more interesting than
hearing me talk about it.
Bite your tongue, Jason Hills. Bite your tongue.
I mean, it is. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting story.
Well, I'm not even going to go into the Patton Oswalt bit, and we're just going to go right into...
Quick takes!
All right, Jay, we've already heard kind of a quick take from you. Let's hear the rest of it.
You know, I bet if you took that behind-the-scenes story and made a short documentary out of it, it would be more interesting than the movie.
You already said that.
Sorry. I don't have anything else.
Mike? Let's hear your quick take.
You mentioned not wanting to get into that Patton Oswalt thing, but I'm just going to mention that the reason anyone's seen this movie is because of fucking Patton Oswalt, and fuck him. Fuck him. He belongs in a goddamn jail cell, because as much as this, he didn't say we should watch the movie, but he didn't explicitly say do not watch this movie. He went on and did a bunch of funny words together, and it was a great thing about how it's hard to write a movie. I get it, but he should have said, but also don't go watch that movie.
Wow.
Wait, what year was that? Does anybody, you got any idea?
2007.
Was Patton Oswalt's bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it had been out for a little while. Paul, how about your quick take?
You know, Jay already did the thing that I wanted to do for my quick take, but I was actually going to get some baby carrots and bring them down here and actually crunch on them to mimic the sound that you hear at the beginning of the movie. But I didn't do that. So, Chris, if you could just add carrot crunching sounds as my quick take, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
I'll do you one better, Paul.
Yes.
I'll just do the noise right here.
There's always the very horny deathbed sounds.
So this film starts with a black screen, and for 53 seconds, all you hear is someone eating an apple. 53 literal human seconds, you hear someone just munching an apple for 53 seconds, and nothing else is on the fucking screen. 40 seconds into it, you hear some eerie banging noise, and you think maybe this is over, but you still got fucking 13 seconds of black screen chomping.
I'm so glad you brought that up, Mike, because... I cannot say enough how weird this opening is, because just when you think, oh, surely the movie will start any moment now, it goes on for how long, Mike?
53 human fucking seconds.
And as you're sitting there listening to...
Yeah, get real in there. Get real close.
You're listening to that. It just seems like an eternity. Like you are trapped in a painting, not unlike the character we meet of after 53 seconds of blackness.
It's not fun, let me tell you. It's not a good time.
The Avengers beat Thanos in 53 seconds. We had to listen to a guy eat a fucking carrot, Paul. Is that like what it really is?
I'm having a little trouble figuring out why you're so mad, because we have watched this film together collectively at the first annual 24-hour B-movie marathon. It was Chris's pick way back, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah, whatever that
and
was.
And I don't remember any complaints back then.
A, we were trashed.
True.
B, I'm stone cold sober right now.
C, we watched it at, I think, 5:15 in the morning back then.
So now I'm going to drink only Malort, no regular yeah. cocktail, because it's the color of the fucking bile that is this movie. I'm going to drink Malort, which also tastes like how this movie feels
well,
on your eyeballs.
You know what? You do that. But let me just say that to this day, it is still one of my favorite movies that we've ever done for the B-movie marathon. So thank you for that, Chris.
Why?
It's the perfect late night movie to put on. It's the perfect, you know, it's 5 a.m. we need to watch something. It's the best of all time.
You're not watching anything. You didn't watch it. You were asleep.
No, I watched it.
Yeah, year one, we were all kind of awake the whole time, right?
Yeah.
Jay, can you describe what is in the deathbed?
The bed dial. Oh,
yes, absolutely. Okay, there are, I probably sound negative so far, but there are some things about this movie that I do like. And one of them is the deathbed bile. Whenever the deathbed devours something, it cuts to a full frame shot of, I mean, I can only assume they just put the camera up to some sort of container holding liquid. Mm-hmm. And it looks like sort of the color of Malort or like orange pop. And then whatever the deathbed is eating is floating in that stuff and dissolving in it. And then sometimes the deathbed bleeds and then like the red disperses through this golden orangey liquid.
It's sweet.
So I did like that visual. I thought that was funny.
It is cool. It does look cool. And they did a very good job of getting the color, because as we all have vomited our brains out before, until you have nothing left in your stomach, this mm-hmm. is what it looks like afterwards. It looks very much like bile. You vomit, it's this yellowy, gross substance, mm-hmm. and then there's like foam Indeed. In this thing. It's fucking effective.
I also want to say that the deathbed itself, the look of the bed is actually, I think, quite impressive.
Yeah, I wonder just how much of that $30,000 was spent moving the deathbed, the bed that eats, from to and from the different locations. Because that's a massive...
It was made of press board.
Was it really?
It didn't... I don't know, but yeah, it looked like shit. It wasn't well constructed.
No, it looked great.
It looked great. It looked solid and massive.
It looked fine, but it didn't look like it was a bed that weighed anything. It had the pillars were like a foot across each. You know, it was
of solid
painted,
hard wood, Mike.
No, it was painted press board. I guarantee.
You probably just like ask George, just find his number in yep. a phone book and call him up and ask.
Yeah. What's up, dude? Yeah.
Probably, yeah.
You can't find him online anymore. He is only in the white pages.
Chris, can I tell you one other thing I like about this part? Right in the beginning, one other thing that I like is that, you know, they divide the movie into pieces. And rather than say chapter one, part one, whatever, like that mm-hmm. a lot of movies do, this one is broken up into breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
And I just find that was a funny way to break up the movie.
Clever.
It also ends yeah. with just desserts, which is a good joke on that then, yes. right? Because that's a thing yes. people say or something.
Yeah, so I like that part a lot. And I yeah. also like the fact that the first people in there are eating a bucket of chicken yeah. for breakfast.
Yeah, baby.
Two apples, a bottle of wine, and a bucket of chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about this. I'm just going to go ahead and spoil everything, is that literally everyone in this movie dies.
Mm-hmm.
So first we meet this artist who's trapped in a painting, which we'll get to his story a little bit later.
I have been trapped in a painting for over 60 years now.
I've been in prison behind my painting in this limbo for 60 years now, since my death. I think half that time I've spent in listening to that monster snore.
But yeah, so let's talk about some of the victims. So Jay, you mentioned you like the first couple. Let's talk about them.
Well, I like the fact that this I don't know what he is, some sort of old school tough guy or something, like, gets this girl up to this weird haunted room. I don't know what he said to get her there. Nobody does, but oh, he got her there.
Wait, Jay, are you talking about that 40-year-old teen?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. You know, he decided that he wanted to take her out for a breakfast date, I guess, to the deathbed room.
Breakfast?
They're in the breakfast section of the film. They're in the breakfast section of the film.
Bucket of chicken for breakfast.
And he brings a bucket of chicken, apples, and a bottle of wine into this room with deathbed for breakfast. And I love that. I do love that.
Deathbed isn't above ordering appetizers before his main course. So he eats the apples, he drinks the bottle of wine, he eats the chicken. And I love it puts the core of the apple and the chicken bones back up on the bed.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's got to eat when there's an opportunity to eat. Apparently, like, people don't come around this abandoned mansion very, very often because everyone has been scared away from it because of all the mysterious disappearances that we see in news footage and all sorts of shit.
Yeah.
The deathbed does eat it, and then he finds it to be like, he's going to sexily feed her. Like, they've been making out. They pause making out. Well, I think because she doesn't want it to be happening.
No. She's hungry.
She's like, oh, no, let's eat that fried chicken you bought, creep.
Yeah, I don't think she really likes this guy.
No, though she goes back into it, but the power dynamics.
Well, it was a weird thing because she said, I don't, you know, let's just take a break and eat. And then when the food is gone mysteriously, doesn't she say, I wasn't hungry anyway?
Yeah, yeah.
No, she's like, I was hungry for a different bone, is what she said.
Oh, yeah, oh. Yeah.
Something's wrong. Well, I must have made a mistake.
Don't worry. I wasn't hungry anyway.
That is actually also where one of my favorite lines is. The guy sees that all the chicken is gone and all the wine has been drank, and he goes, I must have made a mistake. What, did you have an empty bucket of chicken bones sitting at your place and you thought that you grabbed that one?
That's the question, isn't it, Paul? Either he made a mistake and grabbed, like, he went to KFC, thought he bought the family bucket, but accidentally pulled it out of the trash instead of from the counter. Or he has, sitting around at home, multiple buckets of fried chicken. One of them is his bone collection box, apparently, and that's the one, oops, I must have grabbed.
But why would you also have empty bottles of wine and chewed apples sitting around as well?
The same guy that's keeping bones of chicken doesn't seem like a far-fetched idea at this point to me.
And wants to take the girl to an abandoned, seemingly haunted room to get it on, rather than just the place he's living in.
So maybe this guy's roommates were home. He grabs the wrong bucket of chicken and brings the lady to the abandoned bed.
Wait,
in the middle of a...
Yes, Chris. He got the chicken the day before on his way home from work.
Yeah.
Then his roommates ate it and put it back, put the bones back. And then he grabbed the bucket of chicken, thinking it was chicken, gets there, it spills because they're getting hot and heavy. The bones roll out. He's like, oh, he knew what happened, but he just wanted to cover it. To get back to the lovemaking.
It all makes sense.
Yep.
And what did he say when he discovers the mistake, Paul?
I must have made a mistake.
Yes.
And he did. He really did.
Yes, because he dies.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then the bed eats them.
And then it also eats a fly.
Yep.
Chris, this might be a good time for me to bring up something I like to call the kink tank.
Kink tank.
You're going to like this one.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah.
You see, while cannibalism has been found throughout ancient history and documented about various human cultures, the term vorophilia and vor didn't emerge until somewhere in the 1990s on the internet. Now, vor or vorophilia is the fetish of eating or being eaten. In the community, it's sometimes a distinction. There's like a distinction between like soft and hard vor, where soft vor is where someone is eaten and they are unharmed. So they stay within the captor that has eaten them. In Haardvor, it usually involves the prey's flesh being ripped and chewed or bitten or resulting in a horrific injury, like maybe they're being digested inside of a bed.
How exactly would you be eaten and unharmed?
See, Paul, due to the nature of this kink and fetish, many scenarios are physically impossible to achieve, causing Vore to really kind of remain as just a fantasy for enthusiasts.
Ooh.
You see, this movie slightly intersects with Wham, as you guys may remember, as Wet and Messy Play. We've talked about it previously, but I'll let the listener go back to that episode, whichever one it fucking was, and they can listen to me talk about what Wham is.
Listen to all of them until you find
it. But things do get a little wet and messy when they get eaten in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Susan, I hope you brought some other kind of clothes along. You know, we're going to the country, not to a tea party.
No, I did. No, I didn't, but I brought flowers to brighten up the house. In case it's gloomy from being shut up so long.
Flowers? You brought flowers to the country?
So now we meet our next victims, Diane, Susan, and Sharon. Let's talk about them. Mike, what can you tell me about them?
Well, it's three women. They're young. They park their car, then wander aimlessly and find this distant mansion, Paul? Do they call it a mansion at some point?
It isn't. Well, I just know that it was an actual mansion that they shot at that was in disrepair or whatever. I don't know if they actually call it that in the movie or not.
I think it's an estate.
It's a single room in the movie. They don't show more than one single room in the movie. It's a mansion.
Yeah, the deathbed was moved out of the mansion. It was in the mansion, and then they moved it to like a guest quarters or something, and that's where it is in the movie.
The women seem to wander for a while, I guess, and find this thing that they think is maybe a servant's quarters, and they decide to stay in that room instead of the mansion that they're supposedly going to.
It doesn't make any sense that, like, this place has been, you know, just sitting there for decades. I mean, like, decades and decades, and the bed is just, the sheets are seemingly clean, like, everything's perfectly fine. They're not weirded out by that at all, you know? They're, oh, this place looks great.
Well, no one is.
No. They see this ornate bed. The only thing on the walls, it's all black brick. Everything is black brick. There's a black and white painting that has a creeper behind it. And then the only other thing in the place is a fireplace made of, like, a hearth and an edge made of wood, which I'm not a wood doctor, but I'm pretty sure you don't build a fucking fireplace out of wood. But I don't know. But that's the only thing in the room. That's the only thing, right? I mean...
Yeah, that's it.
You know, it was the 60s, there was no internet, you just had to do...
Hey, which risk it? Maybe battle. It'll catch fire, we'll fucking see.
I mean, you know, when we were younger, we would, you know, throw chicken teriyaki bottles off of bridges and stuff like that. You gotta make your own fun, you know?
Yeah.
Like, see if you can catch your house on fire.
Right.
You know, Paul, that story actually connects to the behind the scenes for this movie, because I believe you said he was hanging out at a Denny's or a diner, and we got our bottle of chicken teriyaki sauce from Denny's that we threw off the bridge.
Oh, yeah. Me and Jay actually threw a bottle of chicken teriyaki glaze off of the Camelback Bridge in Normal in, I don't know, 96 probably. Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, not the behind the scenes, the bonus features, they're at a diner. It's not a Denny's, it's the Coney Island Diner. I assume it's probably in Detroit somewhere. We'll have to take a road trip up there and see if it's still around.
So Diane, Susan, and Sharon dies. Susan right off.
Yeah, she's not feeling good or something, right?
Yeah, she's so sick and wants everyone to take her back, and She's definitely the third wheel amongst these three ladies.
You know that because everything is in her dialogue. We haven't said yet that maybe 10% of the dialogue in this movie is synced. Everything else is monologue from people thinking things, or the guy in the painting just narrating to himself.
Well, when you've been trapped in a painting for 60 years, you kind of talk to yourself and kind of review the events of the last 60 years in case someone is, you know, maybe watching you.
Could it have been the self-decreed Dr. Graham and his lady friend who rented the estate as a retreat for the impotent and claimed the bed was a sexual rejuvenator?
But it doesn't make sense sometimes because, yeah, like they'll sync it up, you know, if somebody's saying something, if it's ADR, they sync it up, fine, whatever. But sometimes, like Susan and whoever, what's her name?
Sharon,
they're sitting in front of the fireplace at one point. And they look to be having a conversation, but it's like a telepathic conversation.
Yeah.
Well, I think that was the dream. That was Diane's dream. Because when you fall asleep on the deathbed gives you really bad dreams to really, heighten the flavor.
See, that's one of the things that I really love about this movie is that George Barry basically had some dreams and decided to make this movie kind of based on that. So the whole thing really does have this strange dreamlike quality where things are just sort of happening. Not all of it completely makes sense. Some of it is very serious. Some of it is almost like slapstick. It's all over the place.
Yep.
Oh yeah. Well, there's one whole scene when we get into kind of the deathbed's former victims. It's just a scene of like, here are all the people he's killed. He kills a priest. He kills an old lady, or deathbed kills a priest. Deathbed kills an old lady. And there's like some sort of doctor trying to help who views deathbed as some sort of sexual rejuvenator.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The orgy. The deathbed just consumes an entire orgy.
Yeah. Like 100 years ago.
The whole myth behind deathbed, the whole history and story is actually quite complicated.
Yeah.
They tell it all to you, and some of it they show you some old footage and stuff, but it's very easy to miss it, I think, in the movie.
Yeah.
I have, Chris, I don't know if you'd be interested or not. I have that pulled up if you'd like me to read it.
Sure. Yeah, I'd like to hear this.
So the backstory is, long ago, a demon fell in love with a woman. He was hanging out in a tree and decided, I'm going to change myself into the wind, like you do.
Yeah.
And he fell in love with a woman, conjured up a bed so that he could make love to her. It didn't work out. She died. You can't do that if you're a demon. You can't do sex.
It's the barbed penis.
Yeah. So the demon wept tears of blood, which fell onto the bed and caused it to come to life. While the demon rests, the bed's evil is contained, but once every 10 years, the demon wakes, giving the bed the power to physically eat human beings. Only one man, an artist, identified as Aubrey Beardsley, I didn't know that, was spared, as the bed condemned him to immortality behind a painting where he must forever witness the bed-taking victims. The bed passed from owner to owner until the present day.
Yep, that pretty much sums it up.
Mm-hmm.
Rating time. Just kidding. I love the orgy thing.
Ah, boo.
Well, we got to get to dinner, Mike.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Susan's been eaten. Sharon and Diane were looking for her. Sharon's brother just randomly is looking for her, so we cut to him occasionally.
The only guy you might recognize from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, William Russ.
Listen, you have to go get her.
Not again. Not me again.
You know the mental state she gets into.
How come every time little sister, the world's oldest runaway, leaves home, I have to go out and find her?
I want you to go get her.
Okay. I guess I ought to know where to look for her by now.
I don't want to gloss over when Deathbed eats the first woman. What is it? Is her name Susan, right?
Susan, yeah.
Because sometimes he pukes things out that they're like things will magically appear.
Yeah.
Like he'll eat a flower and the flower will grow outside. Well, he eats this woman, and then there's inside the orange pop, there's this great shot of her skull with a fully intact wig, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like that when he eats, it's one of the other ones. He tries to eat her. She escapes somehow, but her legs are just covered in ketchup or something.
and she drags
herself to the door for... Mike, did you write down how long that took? Oh. Because...
Dude.
I was just about to say, because that's in my notes about fuck this fucking movie at that point, I think is what my lyric... I don't think I had the patience to actually count that out that
time. At least two full minutes.
Oh, God. It's forever. Yeah. She's got to drag herself from the bed across the entire set to the stairs where the door is.
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino would stretch that out and make it interesting, I guess. This is goddamn 6 minutes of fucking kill me, please. And then the deathbed does drag her back at just about the same pace. You think, you're like, she's at the door.
Wraps a blanket
Hooray.
Around her.
She's filing it out. We're going to cut this scene. The deathbed slowly drags her back as she screams more. And it's just fucking...
That gets Sharon's attention. She runs back from the woods she's playing around in.
Yeah.
And she grabs her, tries to keep her from being eaten by the bed, but Diane is eaten before her very eyes. And real quick, one thing I wanted to go back to is the classic scene of Susan before she falls asleep and is eaten by the deathbed. She's undressing, and it sounds like the bed's masturbating.
Yeah. Oh,
it is totally getting off.
I mean, there's also a decent amount of nudity in this film. So, Chris, make sure that you say yes when you're doing your episode of is there nudity in it for this one?
I will do that. I'll do that.
There's also, when he kills her, for some reason, the deathbed knows to, like, cover its tracks and shit. Like, it's
a crafty deathbed.
Yeah, it, like, kills the first woman, and then it, like, it pulls her suitcase in and slurps down for some reason because it needs to. I don't know. It does, though. So
what's great is that this bed makes all kinds of noises, like it's slurping noises, yawns, masturbation noises. It's just
it laughs.
Yeah, it laughs a lot. It's a pretty emotive bed.
And here's something else. I just realized now that after he eats this first woman, that's when it drinks the Pepto, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
After one meal, it's got an upset tummy. And it's going to eat five more people? What the fuck, man?
Well, you know, it's like when you're really excited to go to eat somewhere. Like you're going to Culver's or something. And so you skip the meal ahead or you have a really light lunch or whatever. And then you get in there and you overdo it, you know, it doesn't feel too good sometimes.
Plus she was slathered in hot sauce.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. I guess it could also be you eat something, you know, and then you're like, oh, if I keep this up, I'm going to have heartburn. Yeah. I better preemptively. Right, yeah. So much like it knew to get rid of the suitcase for God knows what reason, it knew. It's like, I'm going to be slurping down some more of these humans. I'm going to need something to help with that.
But who bought the Pepto? Where did it come from? Wasn't the artist behind the painting? He can't get out.
No, he. This is in a direct. I saw a special cut of this movie, Paul.
You did the artist, not.
The deathbed is able to teleport the artist around, and it's paintings and coolers. So he was able to put it behind a cooler in a gas station, and he reached out and got a bottle of Pepto.
Got
plus $10,000 of the budget came from the Pepto Bismol sponsorship.
Yeah.
Did you get on Twitter, Mike, and do hashtag release the Barry cut, and you got to see that?
Barry's like, let me tell you how this works.
4 hour long deathbed.
Oh my God! Can you imagine if Zack Snyder had access to this? It would just be fucking horse shit. Just so
desaturated and slow motion with super dramatic music over it.
I gotta be accurate to the original thing. It's gotta be 12 minutes long of her dragging herself here.
But to be fair, we will get some actual characterization.
What? What are you talking about?
If you're talking about the Snyder Cut, I still haven't seen it. I'm waiting on you, Chris.
So let's talk about just desserts.
Okay.
Sharon's brother finally finds her. And
well, just like dessert is the best meal, I think this is maybe the best part of the movie. You know, he says, look, if she's in there, we got to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets a knife. He's with the other girl, right? He's with his sister or whatever. And he stabs the deathbed. And the deathbed is like, nope. And grabs his hands, pulls his hands in. And so this guy is trying to, like, desperately... you know, get free, get his hands free. The girl is trying to help. He, after, again, quite a while of struggle, but we see what's happening inside that orange pop. His hands are being dissolved like tender KFC chicken tenders.
Yeah.
He pulls his hands out, and it is. I mean, you saw it in the header image for this episode. It's just bones. It's just his damn hand bones. No flesh. He even says there's no flesh. There's hardly any blood. He's kind of like amazed by it. He's like, wow, he just took that off.
And then they just sit there as that go.
They're just waiting for the movie to end
like
the rest of us.
Leave,
go to the hospital, maybe?
Go.
Well, they can't escape because Deathbed has closed the doors. I mean, Deathbed can clearly lock the doors.
And it's also one of those doors. It's just a sliding lock from the inside. Like, yeah.
Well, you know, and then he's sitting there and just looking at him. He's not screaming or anything. And he just decides, I can't take this anymore. So he asks his sister to snap his hands off. That's
and
the
she,
bones.
She's like leaning on him. She's got like her head on his shoulder kind of. And she doesn't even move. She just kind of takes her hand and just snaps it off. And again, he's just like, oh, okay, all whatever. Right. That's a little bit better, I guess.
Yeah, no, I just have two vaguely bleeding stumps.
Oh, it's so good. I remember the first time that we saw that. Here's what I'm trying to figure out. Mike said that the only reason people have seen this movie is because of Patton Oswalt. But I don't think the three of us saw this because of that. Jay, I watched it at your place for the first time. I don't know if it was Chris's DVD or what was going on. But how did we even come about find this movie to begin with?
I think there was a demon that took the form of the wind and it blew DVD into the living room.
Well, I saw a clip of the scene on YouTube with the hands and just the guy's look of mild, like not even mild disgust, just like, eh, okay,
yeah,
my flesh is gone.
So you saw the just desserts and you're like,
yeah,
I got to check
that
this
was,
out.
Yeah, exactly. Hmm. And that's how I
But it didn't have anything to do with Patton Oswalt.
It was on YouTube because of Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, it could have been. I don't remember at what point I don't remember the timeline of that. If I heard Patton Oswalt's thing first or heard about the movie first, I don't remember what it was, but. This is the scene that got it for me.
I could be talking out my ass. I usually am. Okay?
No, I mean, I think we probably first saw this in like 2008 or 2009 or something, probably.
It had a lot of buzz. That's like the best track off that album. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying.
And then I drank too much at Jay's that night and fell asleep. And Jay, for whatever reason, didn't turn the DVD off or the TV off. So I spent 8 hours passed out drunk listening to the Deathbed DVD
menu. Well, hey,
you
got me back.
Music.
You got me back because the same thing happened to me with the Manos menu. For hours.
I feel like that happened first because that happened at me and Mike's place in Normal.
Who knows these things? We don't have a timeline.
Don't drink, kids.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, I got to have some more bile here real quick.
Some bile.
Oh, yeah.
Let's finish this just desserts.
So, okay, so how does this end?
This guy in the painting wants to die, right? And he tricks...
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't really do... He talks to the woman or something and gets her to do this spell because this demon, they just arbitrarily say, the demon is asleep now, so he can finally talk past his painting. So he tells her what to do to get free. She creates this whole spell that will take the deathbed out of the room. It'll put it outside.
It's very complicated.
It is very complicated, but you got to watch it twice sometimes. This is an easy thing to miss. Sharon does this and she like falls over or something and he's like, haha, okay, sorry, I didn't tell you that you're gonna die from this spell because I needed to escape. So she dies. He kills her. The guy in the painting tells her what to do for him to get out and die and to kill the deathbed.
Well, no, so she has to die to resurrect the demon's lover who is buried on the premises. And she rises and then she brings the brother to the circle and bangs him. And that causes the deathbed to catch fire.
Yeah. Yeah. But you still kind of a dick move, though, for the guy in the painting to use that poor woman.
Oh, yeah.
Well, hey, you know, I mean, easier for you guys to say you haven't been trapped behind a painting for 60 years.
True. You are the only one of us who knows what that is like, Paul.
I mean, all porn now is incest porn. So you're saying maybe this was really just like predicting what porn would be, Pornhub.com would be for 40 years later.
I think that's exactly what George was going for.
Yeah.
He's a visionary. Like,
makes sense.
Really ahead of his time.
There it is. All I want to do from behind this painting is watch two siblings fuck.
Well, but they don't.
Yes, they do!
Well, it's the lady who the demon banged who bears a resemblance to the dude.
Yeah.
The brother's
it's
sister, the Sharon.
It's
figuratively incest, but it's not actually incest.
No, in the same way that everything on Pornhub is incest, they're not actually brother sister. It's all actors. I get it. Yes, this is exactly what he wanted.
The point is, the bed, I mean, actually goes up in flames. It's a pretty big fire, and that's it.
Yeah, and the real point is, don't have sex because you'll die.
Ever. Deathbed, regular bed. Kitchen.
Yeah.
Magic circle.
Yeah, don't do it.
Doesn't matter.
So the artist dies? That's what
everybody
happens.
Everybody dies.
Okay, I thought he just got let out so he could bore the rest of the world to death.
Well, technically, the artist died 60 years prior from tuberculosis, but Deathbed really liked his paintings, so resurrected him and stored him behind one of his paintings.
No, wait, they don't actually say that the brother dies, though, right? He kind of supposedly gets it on with this woman.
Well, okay. Well, let's think about it. If he did survive the big flames burning from the bed in their magic circle,
mm-hmm.
he still dies because how is he going to drive his car home? He's got no hands.
So he wanders the woods and probably gets eaten by a bear.
He watched his hands deteriorate in front of him. Bone, piece by piece, they fell off. He said he was done. You know, I hate to get dark here, but he didn't. He didn't last long.
Oh, by the way, when he has his hand bones broken off, he's like, I guess I don't need those, and they toss him into the fire. No need for that. Keep them as a souvenir or something.
If I had bones from my body, I would make little keychains for each one of you. And then you could you could rub it for good luck. Like, you go to Vegas, rub my finger bone, and, you know, maybe you'll get some extra bucks.
It's a party story to tell.
Yeah. Oh, this is my friend's bone. So why do they call you Boner? Well, I gave my friends my bones.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Well, there's this deathbed in an abandoned mansion in Detroit. That would be the most amazing party story of all time. Imagine rolling into Maggie Miley's or something and telling that story.
With like two hooks for hands. He just has...
But bone hooks.
Yeah. Yeah, he's trying to pick up the drink and dropping it and telling the story about the bones.
Rating time.
So I thought I would rate this movie in something that we didn't really bring up, but if you think about it, like, has to happen. And we see a couple times where this happens. But we're going to rate this in deathbeds, the beds that make themselves.
Oh, yeah, it does make itself at some point.
Who's doing the graphic on this one?
All right, Mike, from 1 to 100.
Oh, boy.
What score? How many deathbeds, the beds that make themselves, would you give this movie?
Well, first, I'm going to say something we didn't bring up. I forgot to bring up because it's a very small note. But I did like that someone did have a titular line. And so that's great.
Oh, I don't know.
The artist talks about his backstory, and he says how he drew his deathbed.
Oh, yeah.
And so titular line. So I love that. So that gets bonus points because there's a titular line in this movie. This movie sucks. It sounds weird. It's got a vibe like Zardoz, but Zardoz has a lot more to say. Like, Zardoz is trying to say something, right? So you could put up with it a bit there. But this has some interesting moments surrounded by just bleak void of boring. And you want it to stop. But it is an interesting, unique cult classic. I don't think you should watch it, but if you do, wow. I think you'll be, literally everyone's response is going to be like, all right, there's a couple things in there. All right, later. It's perfect for muted at the background of a party. 49, deathbed, the bed that makes itself. Just on, just the scotch on the side of, don't watch it. But
okay,
just I'm being trying to be responsible and tell you, don't watch it.
Well, Jay, what did you think of Deathbed, the bed that eats?
The concept is obviously ridiculous. I did think that the visuals were, they're simple, but they were effective. I don't need to see this movie ever again.
What?
I mean, I've seen it twice. At what point am I going to be like, yeah, man, I got to put in some deathbed. I feel like I've done it. I've gotten the badge. That's what it is. It's just a badge. It's a, like Mike said, it's a cult classic. If you like B movies, okay, maybe you should see it, you know, but it's not going to change your life to have seen it. It's just an interesting little thing that happened. That's pretty much it. I feel like I watched it and I went, I had, my brain was split down the middle because I'm like, okay, that felt like it went fast, but also, man, that felt like it went slow at the same time.
Yeah.
I had that. Because it's not a long movie.
It's not a long movie.
It's under 80 minutes.
Yeah. So it's not very long, but at the same time, I was like, man, that, I just feel like I'm trapped in time with this thing behind a painting. 56 deathbeds that make themselves. It's pretty boring. Look, it's pretty boring. But if you need the badge, see the movie.
Amen.
Okay, Paul, what do you think? Do you agree?
I'm absolutely not. I'm really surprised by this. I thought that, you know, this movie was something that is part of our B-movie marathon alumni. You know, it's part of our history. I thought, for whatever reason, that everybody had a very favorable view of this thing. I absolutely love it. I own the Blu-ray. I've always enjoyed, you know, watching it. I've seen it plenty of times. It is a cult classic, and I love a movie that keeps me guessing, which this certainly does. I love a movie that doesn't conform to like a formula. It just does kind of whatever it wants. I love a lost movie, you know, that was like you couldn't find it for a long time and then suddenly it's out there. There's so much that I love about this thing. Definitely watch Deathbed, the Bed That Eats. Do it. It's a cult classic, and if you love B-movies, I would go so far as to say that it is a essential viewing. 95 deathbeds, that make themselves.
We should have started with the rating, so we could have all just argued the whole episode.
Yeah. Honestly, Jay, your quick take is the perfect... What Paul said is what your quick take is. It's the... The making of the movie was way more interesting than the actual film.
Okay, Chris, what do you think?
You know, it's one of those cases where I agree with each and every one of you, despite your wildly different scores.
We've had wilder.
Yeah, yeah, well, true. But I agree with both you and both Mike and Jay that it is a slow movie. But there are also some weird things that I really love about this thing is that it's got a weird atmosphere and it's just got a creepy vibe. And for that alone, I think it's worth watching.
Mm-hmm.
It's utterly confounding. Like if you've never seen it before, you have no idea what you're in for because it's not a formulaic film. Yeah, I don't know even how to describe it. I'm not going to go as high as Paul. But I'm not going as low as you guys either, so I'm going to go with 74.
Mm-hmm.
Deathbeds, the beds that make themselves.
Mm-hmm. Very fair. Nice, fair. All across the board.
You should watch this. I don't think you have to watch this more than once.
I think it is a good point that there's a time and a place for a movie like this. So do not like 10 people together and have a big party to sit down and like watch this. People will get mad at you. This is the sort of thing that you can kind of casually watch with a friend or two or whatever and not make a big deal out of it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, fall asleep if you want to. It's almost got some ASMR vibes in certain spots, so.
More of a mukbang vibe, I believe.
Mukbang ASMR.
I think it really genuinely, is perfect for muted at a party. Put it on the TV. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, weird shit happens on the screen. It's fun. You don't need to pay attention to it. I tried watching it high as hell the other night. I turned it off, not because I was like, it's too much. Woo. I was just bored as goddamn hell.
I would like to see, go to a party where this Orgy of the Dead and Begotten just played on a loop.
There you go. Man. Great muted movies.
Somebody tell, if that party happens, please invite me.
Oh, yeah, me too, please.
Can't wait to fall asleep at that one.
Every party Paul and I ever threw when we lived together had Orgy of the Dead on mute in the background, on a loop, on a goddamn loop. We had it. It was great.
Hell yeah.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
Paul, I think you're up next.
Is that right?
I hope you've prepared yourself.
I'll be damned. Well, guys, it's hard to believe, but we're already approaching the halfway point of the season. But I can't wait any longer. I gotta go low.
Low?
I'm going. I gotta go low budge. Let me read a few IMDb reviews of what you're about to be subjected to. This has no business being called a movie.
Oh. All right.
Who in their right mind ever wrote a check for this?
I'm worried you picked a movie I was planning on. Holy shit.
I can't fathom that would be the case. An abomination.
Okay.
This review is obviously a little bit older. When I return this piece of crap to the video store, I will personally ask that it be taken off the shelf. This one is in all caps. Very bad. Bad. Bad, 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 bad. Yes, folks, it's none other than the worst gay movie ever made, a Sam Mirovich film, Ben and Arthur.
Oh.
What?
Yeah.
I think I've heard of this.
Never heard of it.
Yeah. It's a little bit under the radar, but in some circles it is considered up there with one of the worst movies ever made, if not the worst movie ever made. And you can watch it for free on YouTube.
Mm. So it's one of those where there's literally no distribution for it now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. I am familiar with this. I have not seen it.
Have fun, boys. Man.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Wow.
Woo!
Well, thanks again for listening to B-Movie Mania. We hope you had a good time. We sure did.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Looking forward to next week. And let's do a quick rundown of where you can find us online and where you can buy shit.
Friendster!
Go to www.newyorkyankees.com.
That is not true.
Don't listen to Paul. Go to store.bmoviemania.com. From there, you can get lots of a variety of products, things like mouse pads,
bed
and
sheets,
shirts, and hoodies. There's no bed sheets.
And our sheets. Brand new I'm a teasy t-shirt.
Paul, the design is fantastic.
And follow us on Twitter and or Instagram at where?
At Baltimore Orioles on Snapchat.
Nope. That's the TikTok address, Paul.
Oh, right.
BMM Podcast on Twitter.
Yeah, and B-Movie Mania on Instagram.
If you're going to bed right now, make sure it's not a deathbed.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out, touch them. They are touching themselves, and they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
I don't know how the rest of it goes. I think that's it.